Baby. Only it isn't war anymore, it's the insurgent. Let me get this mic a little straight here. There you go, boys and girls. Terrible Tommy here on Freya's Day. We'll probably have a little She-Wolf song at the end of the show here. But it is the 11th. Hey, I like this date. 7/11, 2014. Maybe today's the day to buy a scratcher. Yeah, I'm about as lucky with gambling as nothing, man. The only time I win is not gambling, that's for sure. But I'm lucky at a lot of other things, so that makes up for it. Freya's Day, yeah. P.O. Box 401, West Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And most of you got your July donations in already, so I sent out a money order to George Loeb Jr., who's down in Florida, POW. And I sent one to David Tate, who's over in Missouri, and I'm sending one to Richard Scutari, and I'm sending one to Matt Hale today. So anyhow, your money's not being wasted here, that's for sure. Okay, let's see, where are we going here now? If I can get my little mouse over here. You know, yesterday I did the show on the Mac. And for some reason, when I got done with it, I heard some of the background music floating through there. I don't know whether you heard it or not. You probably did. And I don't know quite how that happened, but I'll tell you, anytime I change equipment, change location, or do anything, there's always bugs. You got to figure them out. You got to clean them out. Yeah. A good old buddy of mine out in California just let me know he had a triple bypass. I knew him for several years in California, and he was instrumental in keeping my computers going. He was also very, very good with Mac computers. And He lived right there in Fallbrook, California, and so he did us a lot of good. He did us a lot, donated a lot of time, so forth. But he's doing fine. I had my, I had John go over and the webmaster and say hello to him and so forth and so on. So he's doing okay. But triple bypass, wow, that's a lot. Well, I see the progressives are all upset this morning because nutball Alex Jones evidently has said something nasty. He called Michelle Obama the first tranny. I think that Jones ought to stay off of that stuff. He says a lot of crap, and he's, of course, a lot of false flag stuff comes out of Alex Jones. But the progressives don't have anything to talk about because they do the same thing. I mean, they do the same thing. You should hear the names that they call the other side and the right wing. It goes on and on. I think both sides should back off a little on this nasty name calling. Tommy never does that. Well, I see a prominent Hispanic, actually he's a Mestizo, Milwaukee businessman, called President Barack Obama a nigger during an immigration reform rally on Wednesday. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported. Dagoberto Ibarra was in the middle of an impassioned speech when he criticized both Democrats and Republicans for the lack of progress on immigration reform. The Republicans are Nazis, he said. The Tea Parties are KKK, but the Democrats are doing nothing for our country for me. He then claimed that the reported figures of illegal immigrants currently in the country only count the people with brown faces. Well, that's true. We don't have any problem with white people coming to the United States, unless we get too overcrowded. The people who come here from Germany and the Soviet Union, they're here illegally, but you don't see them because you people are used to seeing white. If you're white, you're okay. Hey, you got that right, boy. You got that right. Quote, if you're not white, you're selling drugs, you're smuggling, you're no good, Ibarra continued. Quote, I'm brown as I could be, and I don't see anyone doing anything. Well, what do you want them to do? Turn you white, you dumb bastard? They all passed a buck, and Congress has done nothing, unquote. Quote, you know why not, he asked? Because the nigger's in charge. He then quickly walked off the stage. Conservatives attending the event were quick to distance themselves from Ibarra and his remarks. Well, so what? Ibarra's got free speech. We should have complete and utter, total free speech. That's what I've always supported, and I'll stand by it till the end. George Kalatsis told the Journal Sentinel that Ibarra was not even supposed to speak at the event, which was part of the National Day of Action for Immigration Reform. The Hispanic Ibarra, Mestizo, was supposed to be part of the backdrop for the visual, he said. For his part, Ibarra apologized for his statement, but insisted that it wasn't meant to reflect his own beliefs. I was making reference to what Republicans say, he told the Journal Sentinel in a telephone interview yesterday, but I'll bet that if he hadn't said that Obama's the nigger, all the other anti-white stuff would have went right on through. Earlier this week, James Lincoln Collier wrote a column entitled The Nigger in the White House, in which he also tried to criticize conservatives for emulating what he believes they say behind closed doors. Well, they do say behind closed doors, and so do the progressives. Are you telling me progressives never say nigger? Ha! You should read the letters into the paper. The guys that attack me, they call me everything but, and I don't even reply to them because that you're playing their game. If I was black and somebody called me a nigger, I'd just laugh about it, you know? these people that allow themselves to be baited because of this kind of stuff, it's ridiculous. Let's see if I can play what this guy said.
I came here illegally. I can give it my best. But the Republicans are Nazis. The Tea Party are the KKK. The Democrats are not doing nothing for our country, for me. Okay? When we talk about this immigration is good, what do you want to do? You got 11 million people in there. There are more than 11 million. That figure is about 3 to 4 times higher. You only count the people with the brown face. How about all the people that came from Germany? All the people that came from the Soviet Union? They are here illegally, but you don't see them. Why? Because you people are used to seeing white. If you're white, you're okay. If you're not white, you're selling drugs, you're smuggling, you're no good. I'm brown as I could be. Okay? And I don't see anybody doing anything. They all passed the buck. The Congress has done nothing. This is the most useless Congress for the last 8 years. You know why not? Because the n*** is in charge. Thank you.
Oh, these silly TV stations and programs. They give his little talk there, and then they blank out nigger. That was the high point of the whole speech. Don't do that anymore. Well, we had a CNN host. Her name is Ashley Benfield. She looks possibly Jewish, but doesn't have to be. On Thursday, eviscerated a Texas councilwoman who spearheaded the effort to ban undocumented immigrant invader children from entering her city. Let's hear what she had to say.
In a suburban Houston city is saying, not in our backyard. They don't want the prospect of the of having to house undocumented migrant kids. Take a listen.
We can't even take care of ourselves. We have veterans that are homeless. This proposal violates public responsibility. They're not talking to the people about it. You don't get a hearing. You don't get to have a say.
On Tuesday, League City, Texas banned the processing and detention of undocumented migrants within the city limits. They just said, no, not going to let the federal government bring anybody here and put them up. And joining me by phone right now is someone who spearheaded this effort, Councilwoman Heidi Teese. She proposed the resolution, and she's here with me live. Ms. Teese, thank you so much for joining me. You didn't, as I understand it, even have an overture or a request from the federal government to bring any busloads of migrants to your city. You did this, is it proactively? Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, yes, and you have to remember that the government isn't asking anyone's permission. They're not making overtures to the local government. That's exactly why I felt like we needed to step up and do something. My problem was that I was observing the federal government go around local authorities, county commissioners, mayors, city councils, none of them were being communicated with, none of them were being informed, and certainly none of the residents and citizens were being informed or asked for input. That's what prompted me to write this resolution.
So, federal law trumps the kind of thing that you did. Even states can't dictate immigration policy to the federal government, and you must understand that. So what was the purpose of this resolution?
Well, actually, I disagree with that because I don't believe that the federal government is following its own laws. That's part of my problem, and I am a big 10th Amendment advocate, and I believe in states' rights and our ability and our right to be able to self-govern. The federal government is restricted and supposed to be constricted to only enumerated powers, and they're well outside those bounds today. So actually, I would disagree with you on your premise.
Well, I can understand the concern when many of your residents say, look, we can't even afford to look after our vets here. I think a lot of people will understand the stresses that this kind of a thing can put on a community. But at the same time, do you see how those who are your critics say that is just heartless? We've got kids being raped in overcrowded detention facilities. They need help. These are people who are desperate and they need help. And effectively, your critics say you're just turning your backs on them. Can you understand that criticism?
No, actually, I don't. I don't accept that either because the premise, again, is wrong. The reason is because the resolution is aimed at the overall problem. Right now, the unaccompanied minors account for about 18% of the total numbers that are in current detention right now. And so you don't get a choice as a locality as to who you will accept into your community. The feds will bus to you who they need to get
Councilwoman, 50,000 of these kids expected this year, whatever numbers you're working off of are completely skewed by the craziness that's going on right now. And I know you've seen it, and I know you've seen all those people who have come out to protest buses where kids inside the buses have their faces pressed up to the glass, and they're seeing Americans who look like the land of the rabid. And what I'm asking you is, a policy like this kind of smacks of that. Do you not see the difference between illegal immigrants who are here maybe to get a free ride and those who are desperately seeking protection from murderers?
Well, I have to. I have a singular responsibility that I swore an oath to uphold, and that is to the residents of my community. They come first and foremost. That is where my loyalty lies, and right now, my protection has to be for them first. First and foremost. Now, everybody wants to help people in need. That's why Texas is a known haven for people. Look at how we absorbed tens of thousands after Katrina. There is no bounds to the generosity and compassion of Texans. However, in a moment of governance, you have to look at 100% of the problem. This is a crisis. It is being mismanaged by the federal government. Their secrecy leads you to suspect what is happening inside those camps and detention centers. They're not letting representatives of the people inside to ascertain the conditions, and the medical health and mental health are not being properly screened, nor are their identities. And they're releasing them into our communities. This is not something that I want to allow. Frankly, I don't want League City to become one more stop in a chain of human trafficking that is being exacerbated by our own federal government.
I respect your opinion, and I respect the fact that you came on the program today, and I certainly hope that we can get to the bottom of this and that we can all work together in a crisis for the best
solution for that. I know one way that we can get to the bottom of this. The federal government needs to start enforcing the laws. If they start following the laws,
Ms. Keith, you know full well, please stop with this. You know full well that these people aren't escaping into America. They're volunteering at the border to be caught. No one's getting through the wall of those who are there. This is a different circumstance. It's the desperate who are begging for help. It's not those who are sneaking in. You understand?
They are only catching one in five. They're only
We're talking about the current crisis. We're not talking about the greater immigration policy, which itself is a problem.
But it is separate and different from the crisis we're facing now.
The children right now who are arriving at the border are volunteering, surrendering themselves to the border agents. The border agents are actually doing their job. It's being enforced. The problem is there's so many, they're overcrowded. They're being raped, they're being beaten, and they need help. Some of them don't even have water. And at least in one case, 100 of them are sharing one toilet that doesn't even have a door. And that's why I'm asking
what you're talking about right now. You're talking about government funded stash houses. We know exactly what happens inside stash houses. We don't want stash houses. We are trying to stop it, and the only way to stop it is to stop the flow of traffic. And you don't stop the flow of traffic by inviting more in and taking them all in. You have to stop it. You have to stop it before it gets to the border.
I understand that. I respect that. But at the same time, there's a dichotomy here. You have to stop it. You got to send a message. But at the same time, you can't turn your back on desperation, and there's a lot of that. But I have to move on. Councilwoman Heidi Teese, thank you so much for being part of the show today. I hope we get a chance to talk again.
Thank you.
We have some.
Well, I've got an idea for that bitch from CNN. Take them to her town. Where does she live? Or her neighborhood. I'm sure that they'll be glad to drop a few hundred off in her neighborhood. And you know what I would have responded to this bitch with? I would have said, well, why don't the federal government protect us from the rampant crime and terrorizing gangs from Mexico and Central America that are raping and killing people all over this country. You notice these kind of so-called progressives, they're not logical at all. And of course now the thing that neither side will admit, or maybe some of them don't even know that this government has been training military people to back up dictatorships all over South America. And whenever a dictator needs support, he gets it through the SOA and these trained soldiers by the taxpayer. American taxpayers are paying for this. And so they overthrow the democratically elected president of Honduras. They picked him up in the middle of the night at his house and moved him out of the country. Then they took over and started pushing people off their farms all over Honduras. And so that is it's not the just the normal crime in Honduras and the normal street crime, where I'm sure there's quite a bit. But it is the United States government-backed dictatorship and mercenary army that's causing this problem. And so, and the other thing is this. Mexico is allowing it to happen. Mexico could stop it. Mexico's got a very firm border control on their southern border. So how are they getting through? Well, they're letting them come through. And they're not coming through on trains either, as we've shown in the material I sent out to you yesterday. So all they have to do is take the military down there on the border, like I promoted way back in 1980, and stop the flow and let it accumulate there along the border on the Mexican side until the point where the Mexico's got to do something about it. And then Mexico has to return them down to Central America. Or Mexico has to condemn the military dictatorship of Honduras that's really at the heart of most of this problem. So if anybody, you're talking to anybody, call in our radio show, talk to them about this dictator and the overthrow. I don't hear either side. I don't hear the progressives or the conservatives talking about it, because of course, the conservative right-wing Republicans have always supported dictatorships all around the world, and for business purposes. And they're still doing it. And they had this situation of the Americas, soldiers of the Americas or something like that, that they were training down in Fort Benning, Georgia, I believe it was. And that's where that school was, where all those dictators sent their troops up here to be trained to go down back down to their country and bump off any opposition that gets in the way. So that's the truth, and spread it around. Probably won't do a bit of good though, but you can at least win the argument when you talk to people. They'll say, well, gee, I didn't know that. Well, that's because your goddamn corporate press don't tell you anything. Well, they tell you things, all the things you don't need to know. Well, here's another one of those false flag right-wing bullshit operations. Efforts to secure the U.S.-Mexico border with armed militia groups appear to have fizzled as the questions arise about their self-proclaimed commander. Operation Secure Our Border, which was organized by Commander Chris 3%er Davis, claimed Tuesday on its website that there were three troops on the ground, three troops along the Arizona border, and four credible operations on the ground on the Texas border, reported the San Antonio Express News. Hey, when I had the troops on the border back in 1976 or 7, we had, maybe it was 78, we had a lot more than that, and we had patrol cars and everything else, and we stood tall through the whole thing. Nobody ran us off either. Even the Border Patrol tried to play chicken with us down near the border, Otay Mesa, where it's a big fields of just bushes and stuff. And they came at our guys in the patrol car, and our patrol car was specially built. Not a Maserati, but it was built with real heavy springs and jacked up and had a powerful motor on it. And so our Klan guy, he went right towards them head on, and those Border Patrolmen veered off at the last minute, you know. So we had our fun on the border. Anyhow, okay, now it says this 37-year-old Davis of his militia, these militias are bullshit, dropped out of view since his efforts were publicized. Oh, he got his name in the paper and he dropped out of view. Some brave soldier deactivating his YouTube account and Facebook page and canceling interviews with Fox News and Truth Broadcasting Network. That's typical of a right-winger. The commander has gone black because of security threats, said Barbie Rogers, founder of the Patriots Information Hotline, helping the group organize. What a chicken shit. Well, we did all of that stuff. We were even sued by federal court. We had to go into federal court at the same time we were doing the border watch because they were trying to stop us. We were threatened. They picketed us, all these brown berets and all these damn guys. We never backed down, never hit our face or anything. Harry Link, host of the Conspiratorial Truth Broadcasting Network Death to the New World Order program, was furious at Davis' last-minute cancellation, accusing the militia leader of engaging in psyops campaign to trick true patriots such as himself. Well, that's a militia. He's a one-man militia. Maybe he got two or three guys, you know. Have you seen a single photograph of the militias on the borders? Because I have not, Link said. One of the originators of the pro-gun anti-government 3%er movement also dismissed Davis as a fraud. Well, it's the right wing. What do you expect? It's full of four-flushers and cowards. Based on what I know now, stay as far away from this insipid exercise and cluster coitus as you can, said anti-government activist Mike Vanderbaugh on his blog. Vanderbaugh objected to widely reported comments Davis made in a since-deleted YouTube video urging militia members to point guns at suspected illegal immigrants and invaders and tell them to get back across the border or you'll be shot, saying such statements were unhelpful to the patriot cause. Well, I hate the word patriot, but anyhow, we never had to point guns at illegal aliens when we were on the border. We just, actually, it was propaganda more than anything else, but we would find them and then call in by radio to the Border Patrol so they could or could not pick them up. So all this bravado and pointing guns at people and so forth. And don't ever point a gun at somebody unless you're going to shoot them. Quote, what is accomplished by a picket line of armed volunteers threatening to shoot unarmed, half-starved, thirsty children? Oh, Vanderbaugh, you're another one of these pain-in-the-ass, panty-waist militia guys. Quote, I agree with the invasion. I agree that the invasion is devilish in its conception, carried out by collectivists. Collectivists who could give a shit less about how many kids die along the way, and you do too. But will the proposed COA do anything about it other than help to make the other side's propaganda points? All this thing about you care about these kids is bullshit. You don't give a damn about the homeless kids in the United States. Why would you cry crocodile tears about new homeless people coming into the country? No, you're all phonies and hypocrites. Davis describes himself as a truck driver and a former Army specialist. He was until he was stripped of his E-4 rank and demoted to private after he was discharged from the Army in 2001. Well, I was an E-4 in the military with an honorable discharge. The militia leader had posted his private military record in response to naysayers who questioned his credentials, but he neglected to remove portions that showed he had been discharged under other than honorable conditions in lieu of a trial by court-martial. Davis has since removed the document, which is preserved as screen capture and viewed by Ross Story. Soldiers may be discharged in lieu of trial. Look, I don't give a shit whether he was a specialist or not. I don't mean anything. He probably worked in a warehouse someplace. I mean, most of the military are working in supply jobs and support jobs that have nothing to do with anything brave and I took on the enemy men and I'm a badass. No, most of them, like myself, I worked in a radio station a long way from the any hostilities. So anyhow, working at a radio station, I would not go out and tell people I'm some kind of a badass, even though one time I got to fire a burp gun, or what do you call them, like a MAC-10, only it wasn't a MAC-10 back then, I forget what they call them, and I learned, they taught us how to plant C4 on the towers in case the Russians come through. They probably, ATS probably got that in my file too. Hell, it's been so long ago, I don't remember how I did it. Okay, this same guy, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection issued a statement opposing militia action along the border, saying the groups could have disastrous personal and public safety consequences. Well, a lot of those guys could shoot themselves in the foot. But one of Davis' allies insisted the militia groups would work to assist law enforcement. And law enforcement don't want you, believe me. Although Davis himself urged them to start the next 1776 right here on the border if they were confronted by law enforcement authorities. Right. Yeah, it's, you know, about one shot and you'd be running for your life. This isn't a going guns. Look, I want to tell you, when it starts heating up, it's going to heat up inside the country. And the people who start shooting, they're going to be felons and everything else, gang members, and everybody's going to get into the act. So trying to be Mr. Goody Two-Shoes and say you're going to help at the border is a waste of time. And it's going through the motions of shit I did 30 years ago. Let's see what this guy says. That he's all pissed off because the guy didn't show up on his radio show. He's got a Death to the New World Order talk show. You know, he's doing it right out of his house like me. Yeah.
Interview. I can't do the New World Order. Unfortunately, our guest for tonight, Commander Davis of the Laredo sector militia down there, well, he canceled the interview. I can't even say he canceled it. Worse than that, his Facebook page is gone. And I did have his number, of course, so I called him on my cell phone. He answered and said he can't do the interview. And that's that. So, you know, you're looking at someone who works very, very hard to bring people the truth, who just had the truth cut off right before the broadcast started. And so I'm still a little bit pissed off about it. You know, I'm not somebody who does interviews often, and I don't do interviews for trivial reasons, like, oh, I'm going to bring this person on my show because they're popular, and that way I'll get more hits on my website or I'll get more people tuned in. I want to know what the fuck is going on the southern border, and I want every perspective. And I just had the commander of the militia, for no known reason, really for no reason that I can see, cancel. And we're going to be on air for a long time. So I'll probably cancel the midnight news. This is important stuff. Again, I'm still pissed off about the interview not occurring, and we're going to be investigating the militias as well. Are they really even there? Have you seen a single photograph or a single video of the militias on the borders, because I have not. Now, I was going to look into this sooner or later anyway, and part of my looking into that was having alleged Commander Davis on air tonight. That was going to be the ground basis for my investigation into the militia activity. And I just had that rug pulled out from under me when he canceled the interview. Oh, I'm sorry, he didn't cancel the interview. So the first tangible evidence that the militia was doing a damn thing just vanished since alleged Commander Davis canceled tonight's interview while I was tentatively thinking maybe I might go out there and see what's going on. With the cancellation of this interview, and not only that, again, his Facebook page is gone. And I'm going to show you right now.
Well, that's enough of that crap. And he's had this guy's picture on here in his little studio there in his house. And I'm going to tell you, boys, he looks high yellow to me. He's no Aryan. So here's the big Patriot radio station. Oh, God. Looked like he had kinky hair and he'd swarthy skin and... That's the Patriots. So, anyhow, stay away from any of this kind of militia crap. They're just a bunch of, either they're just a bunch of yahoos that are, if they really push it, they're going to get their ass in a jam. Or they're actually government plants in the first place, just trying to get you in there and get you involved in some shit, to pointing a gun at some wetback and then put you in jail for 5 years for pointing a gun at a goddamn wetback. Not even killing the bastard. Oh, God, it gets so... The shit gets so deep, you got to have wings to stay above it, like they said in the movie Apocalypse Now, yeah. And I like that saying. Because these kind of people, this is the right wing. Stay away from these people. I'm telling you, they'll get you killed. Now, you know the only people that are going to put on these kind of things, they're all covering the nutballs, which is good as far as I'm concerned, because they don't bother us. What these guys do has no comparison to what we will do, maybe, or not do. So... Let them follow all these nutball, patriot, right-wing, conservative, uniform-dressed, gun-toting boys. Let them, I see that Jim Gilchrist, he's going to do it, and he's going to have 3,500 men at the border. It's all bullshit. Let them go. Worse is better. Worse is better for now. I don't know whether you knew it, but almost a million people have fled a major military offensive against the Taliban in the Pakistani tribal area, officials said on Wednesday. Tens of thousands of families have left the North Waziristan tribal area for the nearby town of Banu. Can you imagine the congestion? Hundreds more have moved further afield to the towns of Laki Marwat and Karak and Deri Ismail Khan since the attacks began. So about, said 800,000 people on the road fleeing the government. Jeez. Pakistani. Well, let's tune in on this Pakistani thing and see what's happening. A million people on the road? That sounds like L.A. at quitting time. Well, there's something wrong with that tape, so I won't be able to play it for you, but they're going bonkers over there in Pakistan. Showed people picking up stones all over the street. Showed a couple of guys rolling a whole boulder across the street. They couldn't even lift it. I don't know what they're going to do with it. Well, did you ever hear of this? How the Jews fooled Napoleon? July 14th is Bastille Day. Napoleon tried to control the Jews and make them assimilate. Well, that was a bad mistake right there. However, all his efforts had the opposite effect by breaking up the feudal trammels of mid-Europe and introducing equality. He actually set them loose. Napoleon, quote, "The French government cannot look on with indifference as a vile, degraded nation capable of every iniquity takes exclusive possession of two beautiful departments of Alsace. One must consider Jews as a nation and not as a sect." It is a nation within a nation. The Jews, the Masons, and the French Revolution by Vladimir Moss. If the French Revolution gave the Jews their first political victory, Napoleon gave them their second. On May 22, 1799, the Paris Moniteur reported from Constantinople, "Bonaparte has published a proclamation in which he invites all Jews of Asia and Africa to come and place themselves under his flag in order to reestablish ancient Jerusalem. He's already armed a great number, and their battalions are threatening Aleppo." Good old Napoleon, huh? This was not the first time that the Jews had persuaded a Gentile ruler to restore them to Jerusalem. The Roman Emperor Julian the Apostate had allowed the Jews to return to Jerusalem and start rebuilding the temple. However, fire came out from the foundations and black crosses appeared on the workers' garments, forcing them to abandon the enterprise. Oh boy. And the Jews were to be thwarted again. For British sea power prevented Napoleon from reaching Jerusalem and making himself king of the Jews. How many of you people read that in history? The Jews would have to wait over a century before another Gentile power, this time the British, again offered them a return to Zion. You know, that reminds me of something I read someplace where it said that Napoleon originally the Jews financed him, and then he got pissed off at him and he turned against them. But this don't sound like that. That doesn't sound like this. Okay. Napoleon now learned that many rulers before and after had learned that kindness towards the Jews does not make them more tractable. And you can believe that. The more you treat them nice, the worse they treat you. Nekvalodov writes, quote, "Since the first years of the empire, Napoleon had become very worried about the Jewish monopoly in France and the isolation in which they lived in the midst of other citizens, although they had received citizenship. The reports of the department showed that the activities of the Jews in a very bad light. Everywhere there are false declarations to civil authorities. Fathers declare sons who are born to them to be daughters." Again, there are Jews who have given an example of disobedience to the laws of conscription. Out of 69 Jews who in the course of 6 years should have formed part of the Moselle contingent, none has entered the army. Nothing ever changes, does it? By contrast, behind the army, they give themselves up to frenzied speculation. Wow. Unfortunately, says there's describing the entry of the French into Rome in his History of the Revolution, the excesses, not against persons, but against property, marred the entry of the French into the ancient capital of the world. They began to pillage the palaces, convents, and rich collections. Some Jews in the rear of the army bought for paltry prices the magnificent objects which the looters were offering to them, unquote. It was 1805, during Napoleon's passage through Strasbourg after the victory at Austerlitz, that the complaints against the Jews assumed greater proportions. The principal accusations concerning usury As soon as they returned to Paris, Napoleon declared, wait a minute, this guy wanted to be king of the Jews down in Jerusalem? Now listen to this. The French government cannot look on with indifference as a vile, degraded nation, capable of every iniquity, takes exclusive possession of two beautiful departments of Alsace. One must consider the Jews as a nation and not a sect. It is a nation within a nation. I would deprive them, at least for a certain time, of the right to take out mortgages, for it is too humiliating for the French nation to find itself at the mercy of the vilest nation. Some entire villages have been expropriated by the Jews. They have replaced feudalism. It would be dangerous to let the keys of France, Strasbourg, and Alsace fall into the hands of a population of spies who are not at all attached to the country. Napoleon sounds like he's not running on all fours or all eights. I mean, you know, first of all, he wants to include the Jews and be the king of the Jews and go down to Jerusalem. And then he comes back and, you know, says what rats they are. Napoleon eventually convened a 111-strong assembly of Jewish notables in order to receive clear and unambiguous answers to the following questions. Did the Jewish law permit mixed marriages? Did the Jews regard Frenchmen as foreigners or as brothers? Did they regard France as their native country, the laws of which they were bound to obey? Did the Judaic law draw any distinction between Jewish and Christian debtors? At the same time, writes Johnson, Napoleon supplanted his secular body by convening a parallel meeting of rabbis and learned laymen to advise the assembly on technical points of Torah and Halakha. The response of the more traditional elements of Judaism was poor. They did not recognize Napoleon's right to invent such a tribunal, yet alone summon it. However, if some traditionalists did not welcome it, other Jews received the news with unbounded joy. According to Abbe Lehmann, writes Nechevaldov, they groveled in front of him and were ready to recognize him as the Messiah. The sessions of Sanhedrin, composed of 46 rabbis and 25 laymen from all parts of Western Europe, took place in February and March of 1807, and the decision of the great Sanhedrin began with the words, quote, blessed forever is the Lord, the God of Israel, who has placed on the throne of France and of the kingdom of Italy a prince according to his heart. God has seen the humiliation of the descendants of the ancient Jacob, and he has chosen Napoleon the Great to be the instrument of his mercy. Reunited today under his powerful protection in the good town of Paris, to the number of 71 doctors of the law and notables of Israel, we constitute a great Sanhedrin, so as to find in us a means of power to create religious ordinances in conformity with the principles of the holy laws, which may serve as a rule and an example to all Israelites. These ordinances will teach the nations that our dogmas are consistent with the civil laws under which we live and do not separate us at all from society of men. The Jewish delegates, writes Platonov, declared that the state laws had the same obligatory force for Jews that every honorable study of Jewish teaching was allowed, but usury was forbidden, and so on. However, to the question concerning mixed marriages of Jews and Christians, they gave an evasive, if non-negative, reply. Although mixed marriages between Jews and Christians cannot be clothed in a religious form, they nevertheless do not draw upon themselves any anathema. On the face of it, the convening Sanhedrin was a great triumph for Napoleon, who could now treat Jewry as just another religious denomination and not a separate nation. Well, he was a fool for that, appropriating for the state what had traditionally been a subversive institution. Well, you don't realize it, Napoleon, but it was still a subversive institution. Well, let me see how much time we got here. However, the Jews did not restrain their money lending and speculative activities as Napoleon had pleaded with them to do. On the contrary, when it became evident that their financial excesses were continuing, Napoleon was forced to adopt repressive measures against them. Moreover, he created rabbinic consistories in France, having disciplinary powers over Jews and granted rabbis the status of state officials, a measure that was strengthened the powers of the rabbis over their people. In time, Jewish consistories were created all over Europe. They began the stormy propaganda of Judaism amidst Jews who had partially fallen away from the religion of their ancestors, organized rabbinic schools and spiritual seminaries for the education of youth in the spirit of Talmudic Judaism. You see, this is all done in these so-called Christian nations, boys and girls. So you see what was going on way back there? Moreover, as Takhomirov points out, quote, no laws could avert the international links of the Jews. Sometimes they even appeared openly, as in the Kol Espio Kabarim, Alliance Israel Universal, although many legislators forbade societies and unions of their own citizens to have links with foreigners. The Jews gained a position of exceptional privilege. For the first time in the history of Diaspora, they acquired great rights and local citizens of the countries greater rights than the local citizens of the countries of the dispersion. One can understand that whatever the further aims in the resurrection of Israel might be, the countries of new culture and statehood became from that time a lever of support for Jewry. You see, you're always feeling so sorry for the Jews all the time. Bullshit. They've been playing us for a long, long time, including their stepchild religion, Christianity. Indeed, the main result of such Sanhedrin, writes Nechikovolov Dolf, these are Russian names, was to unite Judaism still more. Quote, let us not forget that where we draw our origin, said Rabbi Solomon Lippmann, Kirchbier, July 26, 1808, in his speech for the opening of the preparatory assembly of the Sanhedrin. Quote, let it no longer be a question of German or Portuguese Jews. Although disseminated over the surface of the globe, we everywhere form only one unique people. As we have seen the emancipation of the Jews in France, led by their emancipation in other countries. Let's see here. Even after the fall of Napoleon on June 8, 1815, the Congress of Vienna decreed that it was incumbent on members of the German Confederation to consider an amelioration, I have a trouble with that word, of the civil status of all those who confessed the Jewish faith in Germany. Gradually, though, not without opposition, Jewish emancipation and Jewish power spread throughout Europe. You see, Judaism flourished under Christianity. You know, once in a while, the serfs, the peasants, the unwashed would rise up and kill a few Jews, but they flourished in the seedbed of Christianity. Sound to me like Napoleon was schizophrenic about the Jew situation. Of course, the way they operate, they can confuse anybody because they're never satisfied. They're never getting what they want. They're never relieved of persecution. No matter how good things are for the Jews, they're always being persecuted. And they just do wonderfully under the Christian religion. Well, I'll close out with this story. Yellowstone Park is heating up. Some of the roads are even melting. Hope that doesn't mean that things are getting ready to blow.
Better there at Yellowstone National Park. They are now warning visitors to watch where they walk. along with the melting roads and closed sites. The ever-changing geology of Yellowstone National Park has melted an asphalt road, blocking access to several popular geysers and other thermal features at the height of tourist season. Park officials said Thursday they are evaluating how to address the problem. Meanwhile, they're telling visitors not to hike into affected areas. Evidently, they got some of the trails closed. They say the danger of stepping through a solid-looking crust of soil into boiling hot water is just too high. Yeah, it reminds me of that old saying, nothing to see here, move along, everything's okay. The hotspot. Now, those that follow my videos know the hotspot is the area where they have the uplift and the magma movement, which is rising. It has closed Firehole Lake Drive, a 3.3-mile loop 6 miles north of Old Faithful that takes visitors past Great Fountain Geyser, White Dome Geyser, and Firehole Lake. And to downplay this and make it sound like it's an everyday thing that happens at Yellowstone, which it is not, it says here, naturally changing thermal features often damage Yellowstone roads and boardwalks. Park spokesman Al Nash says fixing this damage will be a bit more challenging than a typical repair. Yeah, it might be a little challenging to figure out how you pave over molten lava. I guess they could go to Hawaii and ask them how they do it. Don't forget, watch where you walk. You might fall through and be cooked alive. Thank you for watching my videos. Bookmark.
Each year to see its geysers, fumaroles, hot springs, and mud pots. It's the largest concentration of thermal features in the world. The park sits on top of the world's largest active volcano, the supervolcano. Its most recent eruption was more than 600,000 years ago. All that remains is the top, or caldera. When you enter the park, they'll give you a map if you ask for one, and it has an overlay of the caldera. It's huge.
Anytime you come to Yellowstone, you have to drive uphill. And the reason is because this giant plume of magma is very hot, and therefore it's buoyant. It's low density and just lifts the surface up.
Dr. Robert Smith has been studying Yellowstone's earthquakes and its supervolcanoes for almost 60 years.
And these giant eruptions in Yellowstone, of the supervolcano, if you wish, probably last many, many months to even years.
Not only that, they're huge, thousands of times as large as Mount St. Helens. Smith and his students use seismographs to map the magma pool underneath Yellowstone's volcano and satellites to determine how much the land swells or bulges. They found that the magma is
2.5 times larger than we had originally imaged.
The magma movement is signaled by earthquakes. Smith mentioned the 4.8 magnitude Norris area earthquake that damaged Lake Hotel last spring.
That's the biggest earthquake in 30 years.
So how likely is it that the big one will blow soon?
In my calculations, it's 0.0001% per year.
From Yellowstone.
Well, boys and girls, there's something more for you to worry about. I could see you there in the night at 2 in the morning looking up at the ceiling and saying, Yellowstone's gonna blow, man! That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow, Saturn's Day. Yeah, in the meantime, be cool. Watch out. Don't join any militias. Don't join any groups. Don't get them any membership cards. And just be quiet and say, I have nothing to say, man. I hear that on TV, more and more on TV shows where guys say, I have nothing to say. And the smartest thing, too, is get me a lawyer. Get me a lawyer. Cops hate that.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble. Give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on! Always look on the bright side of life.
for life is quite absurd, and death the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on, cheer up.
Always look on the bright side of life.
On a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour, that's orbiting at 90 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. It can whiz as fast as it can go, the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, cause there's bugger all down.